Booker surrounded by Lopez. Booker for three. Got it! Devin Booker with a seven-footer right on him. Final seconds. The Phoenix Suns are now 2 wins away from their first NBA championship.
Phoenix Suns win last night, game two of the NBA Finals, 118-108, despite a great performance by Giannis, who had a hyperextended knee, of course, in the last series. Coming back last night, 42 points, 15-22 from the floor. Fantastic performance by Giannis. He scored 20 points in the third quarter, a playoff career high for the two-time MVP. He joined some very impressive company in the process. Now the fourth player in NBA history to score 20 points in a single quarter in a finals game, joining Joe Dumars, Isaiah Thomas of the Pistons, and a guy named Michael Jordan. That's pretty impressive. Unfortunately, it ended up being a loss because his teammates didn't do enough. And Jrue Holiday, I'm telling you, he is the key to this team. He is the key. He's the guy they picked up in the offseason. They gave up a lot of money, gave him a lot of money. They acquired him. He's been really good in the playoffs. He's been up and down at times, but he is not playing well right now offensively. And in the Middleton struggles, they got nothing out of the backcourt last night offensively. And Giannis had to carry the load, and it wasn't enough. The Suns just have more depth in regards to guys that can hurt you. And last night, the Suns, we were just talking about this the other day, about how they can kill you from the mid-range game. And then last night, they made 23s. And we talked about how they can make threes. 8 3-pointers in the first quarter, 20 of 40 from downtown from three. And any team that goes 20 of 40 from three is going to win 99% of the time, no matter what the game is and where it's played. And 6 of the 8 Suns players who saw meaningful minutes last night hit at least 1 3, which means that they're getting contributions from everybody. There is a concern for the Suns. We'll get to it here in just a moment. Here's Monty Williams, head coach, on the difference in the game, in his opinion.
The first quarter was a storm of aggression from them, attacking the paint, offensive rebounding, and we talked about it all morning. We studied game two versus Atlanta. And that was their way to attack Atlanta in that game two after a loss, was to just get to the paint. And so we knew that was coming, and they're a good team. You know, this is the finals, and they're giving a finals effort. But I like the fact that our guys just stayed the course and showed poise, and we were down three. And then in the second quarter, which I felt like won the game for us, our defense was at a high, high level. We held those guys to 16 points. And so that ended up being the difference.
Suns last night, 31 from Devin Booker, who is sensational, 7 of 12 from 3. And then DeAndre Ayton, 10 points, 11 rebounds, kind of a down game for him, and yet he had a double-double. Mikal Bridges was fantastic. I've talked about him for a while now. He is underrated. Last night, terrific. 3 threes, 8 of 15 from the floor, made all 8 free throws, 7 rebounds. Very good defender, 27 points, and only going to get better. And you throw in Chris Paul's 23 points and 10 of 20 shooting. He made 3 threes. And then off the bench, Cameron Johnson and Torrey Craig each hit a couple threes. The Suns had to shorten their bench because of injury. More on that in a moment. And the Bucks really didn't get a lot from their bench. And that's something we've talked about. And they got to go small. Lopez played 28 minutes last night, Brook Lopez. But Connaughton's got to play more, 33 minutes, which is too many for him, for the Bucks to win the series, in my opinion, even though he did score 14 points. But Jrue Holiday, 7 of 21. I mean, he had 17 points, but 7 of 21. Middleton, 5 of 16, just 11 points. Those two must be better. I think Middleton will be when he goes home. He's shown that he can do this where he can explode and have big games. This series is far from over. I think the Bucks definitely, you know, I picked them to win game three and at least make it somewhat interesting. I picked them to win last night. I was wrong on that one. And the Suns, I mean, you know, who anticipates them making 20 out of 43s? I mean, you tell me before last night somebody's going to shoot 20 out of 40 from three. I'm going to take the team that shot 20 for 40 out of three. But here's a reason to be concerned if you're the Suns, just a little bit, all right, just a little bit, is the Bucks don't have a lot. They only had what they have last night from their bench. They basically, Connaughton's the main guy. Teague played 12 minutes. Portis only played 4 minutes last night. For the Suns, Craig only played 7 minutes, got hurt. Cameron Payne only played 10 minutes. And as we mentioned, Saric is out. So here's a concern for the Suns. And I heard on ESPN last night afterwards, I thought it was a pretty good point, that the Bucks got to go right at DeAndre Ayton. Because the Suns don't have hardly any depth up front. Mm-hmm. And last night, here are the minutes that were played by the Suns. Okay? DeAndre Ayton played 42 minutes. That's more than he normally plays. Mm-hmm. And I think he got tired at times, which, how would he not? Booker, 44 minutes. And Chris Paul is more than you want him to play. He played 41 and a half minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's a concern a little bit. Now, I know that Ayton and Booker are young. But the other thing is, Torrey Craig went down with an injury. We don't know exactly what his status is going forward. But if he can't play, and you have Saric that's out, you lost two good defenders, interior defenders. Craig was a guy who could play both inside and outside defensively. And now suddenly, and Cam Johnson's not an inside player coming off the bench, and Payne is a backup point guard. Your next guy off the bench in regards to size is Frank Kaminsky, mm-hmm. who's barely played in the playoffs. So if you're the Bucks, go at Ayton. If you could somehow get him in foul trouble, then the Suns are going to have to play small. And if they play small, now Giannis can have a field day. And Lopez could have a good night as well. So the Bucks are far from being dead in this series. They're down 0-2 to the Nets after losing the first two on the road, came back, won the series. Now, part of that was injuries to the Nets. Listen, the Suns are one injury away from being in trouble. I mean, let's be honest. Oh, yeah. If Booker, Ayton, Bridges, or Paul, any of those guys, if they get hurt, one more guy gets hurt, they don't really have nothing on the bench. And the Bucks don't have a lot off the bench to begin with, but that would equal the playing field if the Suns have an injury. And, of course, we all know if Chris Paul gets hurt, that's a major blow. So mm-hmm. I think there's a long way to go in this series. I know people want to just say the Suns are going to win the series, and the Bucks, how are they going for the next five? Lots of people have said about the Nets. Granted, Kyrie Irving got hurt. But the Suns aren't going to shoot 20 out of 40 from three probably ever again in the series. They're probably not going to do it game three in Milwaukee on Sunday night with 7 o'clock tip-off on ABC. And the Bucks are going to have their backs against the wall. There'll be a sense of urgency. Middleton, I expect to play better. Holiday better. And that place is going to be rocking and going crazy. And I think, I mean, the Bucks obviously, I mean, not obvious. Yeah, I mean, pretty much obviously they have to win. I mean, no NBA team has come back from 3-0 to win an NBA series. And there have been four teams in NBA Finals history that have been down 0-2 that have come back and won the NBA Finals. The Heat, which I mentioned yesterday, against the Mavericks in 06 with Shaquille and Dwayne Wade after they're getting whipped by Nowitzki and the Mavs and lost the first two at home. Of course, the Bucks lost the first two on the road. And the a team called the Cleveland Cavaliers and Mr. LeBron James in 2016 down 2-0 and 3-1 and came back and won. So is there a chance for the Bucks to come back? Yeah, it's been done before, but only four times. And the way the Suns are playing, you would say that that's probably unlikely that the Bucks are going to come back and win the series. But the Suns are one injury away, and I hate to even say it out loud because I want the Suns to win. Mm-hmm. But with Craig out and Saric out, they don't have a lot off the bench, and that was one of their strengths and advantages in this series. And if Booker and Ayton and Paul got to play 40-plus minutes the rest of this series, if the Bucks can somehow win the next two games at home and hold serve, then you've got an interesting game five with a short-handed Suns team. So let's not sit here and close the door on the Bucks and how they cannot win this NBA Finals series. They can. History's against them, but as we know, it has been done before. And keep in mind, they lost the first two games on the road. So the Bucks still haven't even been on their home floor yet. So I think the Bucks are going to win game three. I think the Suns will win game four. I think the Suns will close it out in five. And my original pick was six, and it still could be six. But I think the Bucks will get game three. And then, of course, anything, who knows, in regards to injuries and guys getting worn out and so forth. But something to keep an eye on. Ayton's not used to playing 42 minutes a game.
No.
That's going to be very interesting to see, because last night he played 42 minutes and his production was down despite playing more minutes from previous games. Need to keep an eye on that.
Well, yeah, it's something you had to adjust to if you're 8-2, and you know, like, you think he's younger so he can handle it, but again, he does get, like you said, it showed up a little bit that he was a little tired.
Big guys tend to get tired a little bit quicker.
Exactly. And so, yeah, I mean, it's not ideal, I don't think, for the Suns, but if they need to do that, then that's what they'll do. But
sure.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, you can't have, man, Paul, Booker, and the way Bridges is playing right now, either one of those three.
Yeah.
And obviously Ayton. I mean,
right.
You can't, I know he's playing a lot of minutes, but you can't have him go play 0 minutes and have him hurt. So, that does become a pretty big issue now if Torrey Craig can't play and then Saric is out and you get one more. And it's just the way it is. I mean, that's the way the playoffs have gone, right?
And, yes.
And it's whoever stays the healthiest, and that's what we've talked about, and mm-hmm. the Suns need to be that team that does that, or else they're going to be in trouble.
The Bucks thought they were done. Giannis looked like it was going to be a season-ending injury in the last mm-hmm. series, and now he's come back, and he looks back to his normal self, which is great for the Bucks. And, you know, Donovan Mitchell said before the playoffs, team that is the healthiest at the end of the playoffs is going to win the championship. And the Suns were one of the healthier teams. Now, suddenly, they have two pieces off their bench that are – we don't know yet on Craig if he's going to be out for the series mm-hmm. or not, but it didn't look good last night. And suddenly, things start to even up a little bit. And I will say this. This is going to sound really crazy to some people, but you know who the Suns can least afford to lose to an injury when we're talking about injuries? And that's been the story of the NBA playoffs. Prominent superstar players have been hurt. Is the Suns can overcome no Chris Paul for a game or two. We've already seen it. Mm-hmm. Campaign can step up. They've got a guy that can step in that can play the minutes for Chris Paul. All right? Is he going to probably have more turnovers and take maybe some bad shots? Yeah, but he also is explosive and can get to the hoop. So, you know, if Chris Paul has to miss a game or two in this NBA Finals series, the Suns can overcome it. I believe they can. They've shown they can in the playoffs, especially on the home court. Can they overcome if Booker goes out? I don't know. I don't know about that. Yeah. And I'll tell you who they can't afford to lose is DeAndre Ayton.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm telling you right now, if you had to rank the guys in importance, and immediately people are going to immediately, without thinking, they're going to say Chris Paul is the most important player on the Suns. The Suns won two games without him, mm-hmm. okay, in the Western Conference Finals against the Clippers. Now, I know Kawhi Leonard was out too. But the Suns... they have a guy that can come off the bench and at least for a game, play fairly well. We've already seen that with Cameron Payne. But who's going to replace Booker in the lineup? Cam Johnson? I mean, who replaces DeAndre Ayton in the lineup? Frank Kaminsky?
That's it right
I mean, that's
now.
A gigantic yeah. fall-off. Whereas Paul, the Payne, I'm not saying Payne's nearly as good as Paul, but he can be very solid for a game or two. We've already seen it. So the two guys that the Suns can least afford to lose to any kind of injury is Booker and Ayton. More so than Paul. And I know I love myself Chris Paul. He's awesome. But they can't overcome it for a short period of time. But I think Ayton might be more important than any of them. Because now,
with
who the heck do you have?
What's going on in
right,
the series
they
right
have nobody left
Sarge.
Inside.
Yeah,
you'd have to play yeah. Kaminsky.
Exactly,
lot.
Yeah. I mean, Kaminsky's your starting center if Ayton goes out, right?
Yeah. Who's going to play the five of Kaminsky if you don't trust him? Who's going to yeah. – Crowder. Crowder
I mean,
have to
have
play
to go
five.
Completely small.
Oh, absolutely.
If Ayton gets hurt,
and that means yeah. Payne and Cam Johnson have to slide in the starting lineup.
Yeah,
and then you have hardly any bench at all. They're one injury away from this series completely going the other way.
Oh yeah.
I hope it doesn't happen, but, and of course the Bucks are one injury away from. Well, they could be swept anyway, but. Suns fans, don't count your chickens till they hatch here. All right.
Well, yeah, you gotta. That's no matter what, right? Even
right.
if they weren't. Having a couple injuries here early in the series, I mean,
yeah,
that's the way it always is. You got to go out and get them.
This is what some people don't understand about injuries to role players off the bench. Well, they go like, big deal, right? The immediate thought is, big deal. Saric doesn't score a lot of points. He doesn't fill the stat sheet. Big deal. Or Torrey Craig. Well, Torrey Craig, yeah, but, you know, he doesn't really score a lot. Okay, first of all, here's why you need these guys. First of all, they're both good defenders.
Mm-hmm.
Two, they're role players that know their role. They don't force shots. They usually take good shots if they do get a shot. They're good rebounders. They're good defenders. And the biggest, important, most important thing I'll tell you about Saric and Torrey Craig and any other player in the NBA off the bench, and in college or high school, it doesn't even matter what level of basketball. You know what's the most important thing? Is that gives one of your key players a chance to catch their breath and regroup and have something in the tank later in the game. That's the biggest mm-hmm. thing you miss. Because if you don't feel confident enough to put other guys out there like a Nader or a Kaminsky, now you suddenly have shortened your bench tremendously. And then what happens if Cam Payne gets hurt? Let's be honest. Cam Payne's turned his ankle. Well, if he turns his ankle, now Chris Paul's got to play probably 45, 40, maybe all 48 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that he's one hamstring away from – we've seen it over the years. Until this series is over, I don't believe the jinx is over for Chris Paul. I hope to God it is. But, you know, we still got mm-hmm. – you're that close. They're that close. But, man, make 23 pointers, you're going to win.
That's definitely a boost.
You're usually going to win. All right, local sports. There's some baseball last night.
Yeah, the K-18 Twin Lakes League Tournament semifinals. Opening game, Smith Center won over Beloit Blue 11-3 to advance to the championship game here tonight. In game two, Russell jumped out to a 6-1 lead over Wakanda, but Wakanda chipped away. Got with an 8-5 going into the seventh, and then they scored 7 runs in the seventh inning to end up winning it 12-8. Moving on to the league title game, final night is this evening. Action begins third-place game at 6 o'clock. Beloit Blue against Russell there tonight at Bill Foreman Field, and then Wakanda will play Smith Center Red for the league championship. It'll be 30 minutes following the conclusion of that third-place game here tonight. So that's a look at the K-18 Twin Lakes League Tournament. The bracket can be seen at ncksports.com.
All right, the Royals last night lose again. They rallied.
Santana hits it into right center field. That is gone to tie the game.
But that tie would not last long.
High fly ball. Deep center field. Taylor's looking up. It is gone to Souvenir City, and the Indians walk it off.
Danny Duffy, 5 innings, 5 strikeouts, 4 hits, 1 run. Deserved better. Scott Barlow, second straight game where he has really struggled. 2 walks. Gave up the big home run there in the 8th inning. And so he blows a save technically, although he's not their closer. And then Holland comes in and gives up a double. And then, of course, the home run, as you just heard there. And the most reliable reliever in the Royals bullpen, Barlow, has cost him a couple of games here. And then Holland, the whole plan that they had didn't work out. When Hernandez doubled for the Indians, then 2 outs, Holland intentionally walked Jose Maria Ramirez to face Franmil Reyes. And that's what you just heard what happened. 3-run homer, game over, walk off. Seen that before in Cleveland, haven't we? And the Royals lose 7-4. Royals now lost 13 of the last 16. They're a season high 15 games under 500 at 36-51. And this is their final series before the All-Star break. And it's unfortunate because Barlow's pitched very well this year. He's hit a bit of a rough patch, unfortunately. There's some saying that he deserved to be an All-Star. When you're a losing team, you don't deserve more than one All-Star, in my opinion, for the most part, unless you have 2 great players. And so Santana against his former team, able to tie it. Good news, Hunter Dozier was able to get a couple of hits, a home run and a double. So maybe he's going to finally snap out of things. That would help. And but Danny Duffy looked pretty good. So there's a few positives to take out of it last night. But it's the second straight game. The Royals had a lead, and the bullpen couldn't hold it. So we talked about how starting pitching is important. Lately, the Royals starting pitching has actually been better the last 4 or 5 games. You know, Keller went 6 innings, got a loss. Minor went 6-plus. It was good through 6, and then things kind of fell apart in the 7th. And then Kyle Zimmer didn't do his job in that game. Richard Lovelady didn't do his job for Keller the other day in the weekend, over the weekend. And then, of course, Barlow the last couple of nights against the Reds when they had a 2-0 lead. And last night, they had a 3-1 lead going into the bottom of the 8th. Oh, I pine for the days when the game was over, when the Royals handed it to the bullpen in the 7th. Remember those days? Herrera, Madsen, and Davis, or you had Herrera, Davis, and Holland. I mean, it was over, man. You just had to get through 18 outs because the last 9 were almost automatic. Yeah, I really do pine for those days because the Royals bullpen has not been that great all year long. It's been serviceable. But I still say the Royals have, and it's an indictment on the Royals organization when Greg Holland is pitching in the 9th inning trying to close the game or keep the game tied. And Greg Holland is I think he's pitching off of grit more than anything else.
Yeah.
And he has been seen by so many guys in the American League so often that people know what is coming to an extent. And then, you know, Stamont now is kind of more in a setup role. He gave up 2 hits last night, but he did get out of the inning in the 6th, so the Royals lose again. So let me ask you this. The trade deadline's coming up. The only guy that is going to get any kind of haul for the Royals would be Whit Merrifield. I think everybody knows that. They're not going to trade Benintendi. They traded to get him. He's just turned 27. Salvador Perez is obviously off limits. He's going to start the All-Star game on Tuesday, be in the Home Run Derby on Monday at Coors Field in Colorado. Carlos Santana could be somebody they possibly would trade. Of course, I sit here and say, who's ready to go play first base in place of Santana right now?
Mm-hmm.
Is it O'Hearn? I don't know. I don't think so. Prado's not ready. You saw him at Windsurge the other night. He's at Double A. He eventually could be the first baseman of the future. You know, you're not going to get anything for Dozier. He's got a big contract now. You're going to get nothing for Soler, who's not even in the lineup right now. That's how bad he's been. Nobody's going to want him. Michael A. Taylor could be a defensive replacement. He might get a low double-A prospect, which is not usually going to pan out to be much. Scott Barlow, they were talking about, hey, he might be trade bait, and now all of a sudden he's had two bad performances, and maybe he's got that getting his head. I don't think Greg Holland's going to get you anything. Honestly, guys that might get you something would be Josh Staumont, who I don't think they want to unload. And another guy that the Royals could get something for, and here's one that's going to really blow your mind. What about Adalberto Mondesi? His value isn't high in regards to, well, actually, his value is probably still high. He's only 25. If you think Bobby Witt Jr. is a shortstop of the future and he's tearing it up at double A, do you move Mondesi? I don't. But there was talk I heard yesterday on my friend's sports program there in Kansas City, Seren Petro in the program. They were talking Jeff Passan, and he said, you know, here's a name to think about when you're talking about who's the best trade pieces. He said, I know people are going to laugh, but he said people will call and ask about Mondesi because they're going to say, hey, you know, we could get a steal of a deal if they're fed up and tired of him being hurt all the time. And Bobby Witt Jr. is going to probably take his job anyway, if that's what they believe. I believe if Mondesi's healthy, he'll play short and Witt will play third. But if Mondesi can't stay healthy, then Witt is your shortstop of the future.
Yeah.
What about that, though? I mean, if you are the Royals, would you entertain offers for Mondesi, or would you just not listen at all?
I think I would entertain. I don't think I would get what I would want, probably, for Mondesi,
right,
because of the injury thing.
Right.
You know, I think that the Royals know who he is when he's healthy, right?
We've
so
seen
they're going
to
value it a little higher than somebody right now that's calling to trade for him. Because the color right now says, well, he's not playing, so he's not giving that much value, so you're not getting much value back, right?
Right.
And so that would, yeah, I would listen to calls and field them if people are interested, but I just don't feel like the Royals are going to get anything near what they feel like he would be worse.
I don't either. I mean, that's why I don't think you entertain it very much.
Exercise and futility, really.
Right. But there will be people that will kick down or, you know, knock on the door and ask, which, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that. It doesn't hurt to ask. You know, it's kind of like asking the girl out to the dance. And, you know, your odds, they might be against you, but you don't know until you ask.
Yeah.
You might be surprised. She might be desperate and go out with you.
I had it happen once.
That
happened?
It happened. A girl was desperate and went out with you to a dance? Sweet. Hey, whatever it takes, man.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, if it can happen for me, it can happen for anyone.
You had those puppy dog looking eyes, sad eyes. They're like, I kind of feel sorry for you. I'll take it. I'll go with you, sure. Or I'm desperate. I got nobody else to go with. You got a car that has gas and runs? Okay, I'll go with you, Dusty. It sounds good. That's funny. So the Royals now 36-51. A couple of things. Royals back in action, by the way, today, tonight, 6:10. It'll be Brad Keller on the hill, his 6.39 ERA. And then tomorrow, Mike Minor on the hill, ERA of 5.36. And then Sunday, the Royals don't know who their starter is before the All-Star break. As I said, Salvador Perez, home run derby Monday night. Reason to tune in for that if you're a Royals fan. And then Tuesday, the only guy on the All-Star team, although maybe Whit Merrifield will be an injury replacement possibly, would be Salvador Perez. He's only Royal, and he does start. So you watch the first three innings, and then he'll probably be out of the game, and you don't have to watch the rest of the game if you're into that in regards to the All-Star game and the Royals. Let's see here. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, baseball. Last night, a couple crazy things. Did you see what happened between the Padres and the Nationals last night?
I have not.
Max Scherzer was pitching for the Nationals, and the Padres, the Nationals were up 8-0. In the fourth inning, they're up 8-0. So you think, this game's over. Scherzer's awesome. Tatis hits a gigantic home run, makes it 8-1, his 28th of the year. And next thing you know, Scherzer loses control. He hits two batters. He walks a guy. And the Padres are down, remember now, big early. So they went to a relief pitcher. So they left the relief pitcher in to hit. And he's a rookie relief pitcher. And he came up with the bases loaded. He's a 28-year-old rookie, Daniel Camarena, and he hit a grand slam.
Nice.
Off of Max Scherzer on a 1-2 pitch. 96-mile-an-hour fastball that he drilled into the right field stands. And it went 416 feet. And I believe they said that's the first time that a relief pitcher has hit a grand slam since, I'm trying to see if they have it here in this story. I thought it was 1985, but it might have been more recent. It's interesting. Now, CBS Sports doesn't have it. That's something people would want to know. And I know I saw it on TV or something last night.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty impressive. Let's see if I can find the his name here and put it in Twitter.
It was 85 on the MLB website.
It was 85. Okay. So
on
my
MLB
memory.
Twitter says the first relief pitcher to hit a grand slam since 85.
So my memory was good. Yeah. Sometimes it's not, and sometimes it is. So it was. So that's pretty crazy. And then the Padres came all the way back. They're down 8-0, came back and won the game last night. Max Scherzer's on the hill in the fourth inning. Nationals up 8-0. Every National fan's going, well, this game's over. The Padres scored 9 unanswered and won the game, and the key hit was a grand slam by a relief pitcher who's a rookie at the age of 28.
That thing
he
too,
golfed
man.
It. Yes, he did. It wasn't a bad pitch.
No.
96-mile-an-hour fastball low and inside, and he went down and golfed it out. Pretty impressive. Another thing about Major League Baseball last night, Brad Miller records the first three-homer game for the Phillies since 2008. Brad Miller, remember him, played for the Sacramento Kings? Oh, this is a different Brad Miller. Brad Miller hit a three homers. He's the first Phillies since Jason Worth to do it back in 2008. Three homers last night as the Phillies beat the struggling Cubs. So a couple of interesting baseball notes. COVID-19 is postponing a huge title fight. The championship trilogy between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder has been postponed from July 24th after a COVID-19 outbreak in Fury's camp. Fury is among those who have tested positive for the virus. He received one dose of the vaccine, but never the second shot. Fury is sick, but not that sick, but all are realistic about what this virus can potentially do. There is talk that they could reschedule this possibly in October. So the gigantic fight coming up here in a few weeks between Fury and Wilder, part three, will have to wait another day. There is a gigantic fight in UFC. Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. And, of course, they have fought twice already. McGregor won the first time. And then back in January, they fought a second time, and McGregor got beat. And got beat pretty good. McGregor says he wasn't focused, so forth, so on. He was looking about a training camp and about a boxing match with Manny Pacquiao, and he says that's why he lost. Whatever. Make excuses all you want. he'll be less than a week out from turning 33 when he faces Poirier coming up on Saturday. It's UFC 264. Poirier is now, after being an underdog the last fight, is now the favorite going into this fight. And we'll see what happens. Conor McGregor is kind of like Muhammad Ali from this standpoint. And I remember Muhammad Ali and reading about it in the documentaries. Muhammad Ali fought too long.
Mm-hmm.
But he kept, but he was still relevant. He kept coming back and fighting, and people still paid. And it's like Mike Tyson, even though once he was, you know, kind of washed up, people still, like if Mike Tyson goes out and wants to make a comeback, an actual really box instead of exhibition, people will come and watch it because that's the staying power. You know, Tiger Woods, he could be really bad at golf. People are still going to watch him play golf because he's Tiger Woods. And I think the same thing about Conor McGregor. I don't think his skills are what they once were. It happens. Father time catches up to you. But I think, you know, if the UFC is ever struggling to get a gate or to get people to pay for pay-per-view, you just go ahead and find McGregor and ask what he's doing, whether he's fought for a year or he's been beaten twice recently or whatever it might be. He's a box office draw. And so the UFC is going to keep going to that well. And I think even if he and it seems like this is the fourth fight now. I've heard Conor McGregor, oh, if he doesn't win, it's going to hurt his legacy. Or if he doesn't win, it's the end of his career. I'm like, dude, he keeps coming back from the dead. So, no, can McGregor win this fight? Absolutely he can coming up tomorrow night. And if he loses, what's going to stop him from fighting some more? Mm-hmm. If you can make money, Dana White's not stupid. UFC president. I mean, if you can make money off a guy, whether he's got five or six losses, and he has five right now, Conor McGregor, it's not like he's undefeated like Floyd Mayweather, putting something on the line.
Mm-hmm.
You keep rolling McGregor out there against other people. If Khabib wants to come out of retirement and wants to fight, go for it, you know? Poirier can win this, and he won't be as big a draw as McGregor.
No.
A year from now. And Poirier could win every fight between now and then. McGregor cannot even fight again. It'll still be the draw.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why do you think Mayweather and McGregor was a draw? Because of two big names in each sport. So I don't know who's going to win the fight coming up tomorrow. I'm not paying for it to watch it, although I'd be more willing to pay for that than watch some of these boxing matches.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Although Fury and Wilder, I think I would be interested in, but I would be cheap and find a friend that already purchased it, and then I would go watch it at their house and bring some beer or something. So McGregor, Poirier coming up. Wimbledon, where are we at on that?
Yeah, semifinals on the men's side taking place today. So let me pull that back up here so I can actually tell you exactly who's playing and how that's all going. But obviously Novak Djokovic playing today, and he's going in His match so actually start here about 10 o'clock this morning. Berrettini and Hurkacz were playing at 7:30. I don't have that one pulled up right in front of me, so that was the first semifinal. But Barty and Pliskova are playing in the championship on the women's side tomorrow. And again, Novak going for the championship appearance today as well there at Wimbledon.
All right, a note from golf. You remember Angel Cabrera?
I do. Don't know him well, but I remember
he won the U.S. Open in 07, won the Masters in 09. Was convicted on charges he assaulted, threatened, and harassed a woman between 2016 and 2018. He faced a total of six other domestic violence-related charges, and he was sentenced yesterday to 2 years in prison in Buenos Aires. They found him guilty on charges of assault against his ex-wife. So it was his ex-wife that he apparently did those things to. So he should go to prison if he did that. Interesting note. High school junior Jalen Lewis, who's all of 16 years of age, has signed a $1 million plus contract with the new Overtime Elite League. The 16-year-old becomes the youngest to ever turn pro in American basketball history. 16. And he's going to have $1 million in his bank account. Gee, what could go wrong with that scenario? He's suddenly got a lot of new friends.
Guardian that's taking care of that the right way.
Sure hope so.
That's really dangerous.
Yeah. I just hope that he can handle the publicity. I mean, that's a lot of money to give to a 16-year-old. And he obviously got to worry about the maturity level, which that can be true of a 26-year-old too. But that's quite the story there. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, he's only a year older than my oldest son. Why can't my oldest son make $1 million?
I'm going to have to talk to Dylan a little bit here, my nephew, and see what we can do.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I better get in early on that, right? Like, just make sure. Hey, remember how much I supported you, buddy.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Remember, you know, you know what? Either go make $1 million or I'll hand my oldest son a bill. This is for room and board and meals. It's a lot of money. Hey, the spelling bee, I almost put a sarcastic tweet out there yesterday. I thought about it. I saw the ESPN was going to have it on TV. I go, oh, yay, so we can watch seven people tie for first and all get a trophy. I didn't say it. I'm glad I didn't, because last night there was one true champion, believe it or not.
Yeah, they've actually changed the rules. I don't think that they would.
What a concept and idea.
Anymore, yeah.
That one true champion?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. They changed the rules to make sure of it.
I'm pretty sure they did.
What a thought. 14-year-old Zayla Avant-Garde is the 93rd Scripps National Spelling Bee champion. She's also an elite middle school basketball prospect who has been in a commercial with Steph Curry already. So you talk about a spoiled brat. She's great at basketball, and she's great at spelling. And she said spelling is just kind of a hobby. Okay, for all those people. Yes. All those people.
Just a hobby.
All the people that work so hard, focusing all their time all year long on winning the Scripps National Spelling Bee, and they lose to a girl that isn't even her main focus. Those are the people that really irritate you, right? Like, you work so hard, and then somebody joins your team in midseason and hasn't even practiced something, basketball, football, baseball, and they'd end up just automatically being awesome. It's like, seriously, I've worked so hard, and you just show up, and you're better than me already? But, yeah, that sounds like she's a great speller, clearly. And she's a very good middle school basketball prospect. So now she's on the radar across the country because she won the Scripps National Spelling Bee. So maybe she'll sign $1 million professional contract here very soon, along with Jalen Lewis, who just
Can't be that far away if she's excelling in all those areas.
Well, don't they get, like, $50,000 or something for winning the Scripps Bee?
I'm not sure what that is.
I'm pretty sure that you get – it's a scholarship.
It's a scholarship, but, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'll do this. Scripps Spelling Bee Prize. Let me see it. I said 50. My memory's not bad today.
Yeah.
$50,000 cash prize. $50,000
cash prize.
That's what it says here. Huh. Commemorative medal, the Scripps Cup, which is the official championship trophy of the Scripps National Spelling Bee, a $2,500 cash prize, reference material, so forth and so on. Interesting. Let's see. If I didn't know this. If you miss in the first round of the finals up to seventh place, you get $2,000. Sixth place, $2,500. Fifth place is $5,000. You get fourth place in the spelling bee, $10,000. Third place, $15,000. Runner-ups, $25,000. And you win it all, you double your money, $50,000. I thought it was a scholarship. I mean, what I'm seeing here is saying it's cash.
Yeah, I mean, it would, yeah.
Huh. Well, good thing we got rid of these NIL rules and everything else, because wouldn't that be a violation if the person wants to play athletics? He couldn't accept the cash prize, right?
Yeah.
Huh. First African-American winner ever for the Scripps Spelling Bee for the 14-year-old eighth grader. That's pretty impressive. Congratulations to her. 2019, the first place prize was raised from $40,000 to $50,000. So that just happened not too long ago. And I could have swore that would have been a scholarship of some kind or something that has to go towards their college of their choosing.
But yeah.
It appears that's not the case. Learned something new today. Anything else to add before we let everyone go?
I will tell you, Berrettini and Hurkacz, I have that score. Berrettini won the first two sets. Hurkacz just won a set in a tiebreaker. So after beating Roger Federer and sweeping him, he's down right now and trying to come back.
Everybody was sitting on pins and needles waiting for that update from Wimbledon, because I'm sure everybody in North Central Kansas knows, first of all, where Wimbledon's played. Secondly, what surface it is. It's grass.
Yeah.
And third, they might know a couple letters out of those two names you just mentioned. I don't even know those guys' names, and I follow tennis a little bit.
Yeah.
But odds are.
I knew Berrettini before this tournament, but not Hurkacz.
Djokovic plays later today, then?
Yeah, he plays.
Odds are Djokovic from is going to move on.
I mean, he's without question the favorite.
Yeah, unless he hits a ball boy or ball girl with a tennis ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Throws his racket or. Or, you know, if Korg gets hurt, that can happen, too. We've seen that a couple times. You know, Serena, first round, had to, you know, withdraw from the tournament, unfortunately. Naomi Osaka's on the front cover of Time magazine. I thought she didn't like media coverage.
Listen,
there are people that are
critical.
That's
a can of worms that can be opened, because she's got a series coming out on Netflix, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying she doesn't deal with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
With depression and anxiety and things like that. But the outside looking in people have a lot of questions about Naomi Osaka, and I don't fault them for that.
Right. Yeah.
She just came out on the cover of,
it's Time magazine that I'm talking about.
Which one was it? I think it was Vogue in Japan.
Okay.
Where she's wearing a bikini. She's on the cover of the magazine, and it's like, do you, like, but that's, again, that's just a picture of her. She's not actually talking in front of people. She's out there in a picture, right?
She will be in the Olympics.
Yeah, she's.
And now there are no fans that might help her.
Yeah.
Or not, I don't know. There's still going to be people that can cover her media-wise, I would imagine. It is interesting. I mean, you know, it is complicated. There's no question about it. You want to respect if she's having mental health issues, which I believe a lot of athletes do, not just her.
Mm-hmm.
You do wonder if she's using this. Some people would say she's using this to actually help her in other ways financially, as you just said, with a show and this and that. Other people could argue she's using her platform to bring more attention to mental health and athletes dealing with that, or people in general with mental health. And so that's why she's doing a Time magazine cover and doing an interview at Time magazine and other media outlets in regards to magazines or whatever, is that she's bringing more attention to the issue that maybe hasn't been addressed in society, which I truly believe that. I mean, I think we completely mess up when it comes to mental health issues. Immediately when there's a horrible thing that happens, we talk about taking guns away, knives away, and bombs away, or whatever it might be, and we never, ever take the time to go, could that have been prevented before somebody even went and bought the gun?
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that. We just don't. It's just because that's too complicated or too hard. So if it's too hard, we'll just go ahead and create a diversion, and that diversion to me is arguing about the points that really aren't the root of the problem. The root of the problem is nobody that does these horrible things in our society, whether it's in our country or anywhere else, anybody that does these horrible things, violence and hurt people and so forth and so on, they're not mentally stable. They have mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Automatically, they do. There's something that's happened in their life that's caused them to go down the wrong path. Mental health is very important to address. And so I give Naomi Osaka credit for bringing attention to it.
Absolutely.
And Kevin Love has done it. DeMar DeRozan. There have been other athletes that have done that. LaMarcus Aldridge has talked about it recently, too. So when it is very, I think it's very touchy and very delicate, even for me, because to say this, because I don't want to say that she's doing this for all the attention and doing it for the wrong reasons, because she has given up money by not playing in Wimbledon or French Open. She would have probably made the semis or maybe won it all. So she's given up stuff. So I don't think it's an act. At the same time, I understand the criticism going, okay, I thought you didn't want this attention. And so now all of a sudden you're on the front cover of Time and you're doing this and you're doing that and do a series on Netflix. I thought you didn't like this stuff. Mm. At the same time, it gives her a platform to maybe discuss these things so that more people feel more open and more comfortable to say, hey, if Naomi Osaka, one of the best tennis players in the world and one of the best athletes in the world, especially on the female side of things, if she can do that, I can do that. And so that could serve as a very positive experience and be a bit of a role model for younger women out there, whether they are African-American, whether they're Japanese descent or mixed race or they're white, it don't matter. Mm-hmm. But it could be really good for women or young girls out there that might be dealing with whether it's identity crisis, whether they're dealing with mental health issues, whether they're having problems with stress or pressure at home or whatever the case may be. So I think it is very careful before we start casting stones and saying, well, she's on the front cover of Time, so this has been a ruse, and she's just doing this. I thought she didn't like this attention, and it really bothers her. Well, apparently she's all good okay now because she's on the front cover of Time, and I guarantee you people are already saying that, and that would be unfair. But I do understand both points of view that they might have. From the outside looking in, I can see how you can look at it from either angle.
Yeah, that's why I said it like I did, because I'm not saying that, right?
Sure.
That's what people,
right.
I guarantee, and I've seen it, right?
Right.
On comments on Twitter or wherever it be, that, you know, we talk a lot about optics, right? Like, the optics aren't great when you come out of a tournament because of your depression, anxiety, you don't like the attention and things like that, and then you bring more attention to yourself, right? In the end,
right.
When you're doing these different things. So, yeah, again, those are not my opinions. That's just how society reacts to stuff, basically, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, I'll put a wrap on this show. Lots of things that we can discuss from time to time and things that pop up that are, and, you know, sports many times is a microcosm of society.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an example of that. So, you know, it's okay to ask people, are you doing okay? But actually listen to the answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing that a lot of people do. I'm guilty of it too. Hey, how you doing? And they say, oh, good. Or, hey, what's been going on? Nothing much. But do you look at their body language? Do you look at the make eye contact?
We don't ask that question for them to give us a 2-minute answer to how life's going, right?
No.
It's just a quick passing.
It's a
courtesy. How you doing? Hey, we're doing good.
Yeah, but you don't care.
How you doing? Keep it moving, as Pat McAfee says, right? Like,
yep. Yep.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah. If somebody actually stops and wants to start talking to us for 5 minutes about it, we're like, dude, I didn't really care.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the thing. If one person can reach out and help somebody, you never know who you can affect if you're being observant and paying mm-hmm. attention. And there have been people that have thought about committing suicide. I've read many stories about this, that luckily somebody reached out to them, or it was a simple, you know, bump into somebody and prevented them and changed their life, and the other person didn't even know they had changed their mm-hmm. life. So little things like that can be very helpful. But mental health is a very important issue in this country. It should be a bigger issue than it is in this country. There's no doubt our elected officials should do more to help provide the services that people need, more social workers, more psychiatrists, more therapists, psychologists, whatever you need, so that we can maybe prevent bad things happening to people, whether they're endangering themselves and they decide to leave this earth too soon, or if they, you know, have these horrible, violent situations that don't end well and affect so many other families and people across the country and the world. We need to be better. We have to be better, or nothing is going to change.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.